This is the Book Riot Podcast. It's a weekly news and talk show about book reading rewards programs. No, about what's new, cool, and we're talking about in the world of books and reading. Today is Thursday, November 17th, 2022. I'm Jeff O'Neill, here with Rebecca Shinsky, coming to you from bookriot.com. Rebecca, we've got a lot of news, but mostly...
But mostly,
I want to thank everyone for emailing me about Kindle Rewards and then something else, which we're going to talk about here in a second. I don't know that we've ever gotten a bigger response to email us if you got a thing about Kindle Rewards, which we'll get into in a second. But I do. It's so interesting to see because this is the kind of thing that like no one else is talking about this, right? I mean, you're not going to hear another podcast talking about the Kindle Rewards program, but we also don't have any data about it, like how many, how long it's going on. I got all kinds of stuff I'm going to share with you here in a minute.
Great.
But I did want to shout out the listeners out there for sending 45 emails saying, I too was in Kindle Rewards, and here is my precise book buying regimen so that you can analyze this in detail, which I did not do, but I will relate to you anecdotally as we proceed. Kind of our last regular show for the year, you were just mentioning. You want to walk the people through what the rest of the year looks like for us and why
yes.
that might be?
Let's see. So the next 2 weeks will be the personalized holiday book recommendations, whether for gifts that you are purchasing or gifts that you are giving to yourself. Sometime after, I've lost track of what the order is for all of these, but somewhere in there, we will do our favorite books of the year. And we will do the best of the rest, which we tend to do most years. But this year, we're definitely doing it because the Book Riot Insider selected it as a show topic. And that's where we talk about all of our favorite non-book things of the year. And I believe that's it. There might be one more in there. But it's all...
There's no regular show for the Thanksgiving week. And then suddenly we're in the holiday Christmas time where we take the week off for that as well.
Yeah. And there's no... We're just in the land of wrapping stuff up, looking back. We'll be doing that on the Patreon episodes as well for the rest of the year, kind of end of year sorts of things. But today we are recording our power ranking of the most popular books from 2012, according to Goodreads. We're looking back a decade because we had so much fun when we looked back at the year 2000 that it was like, wait, we could do this more.
There are other years in history, Rebecca.
There are. And we could anchor it to the year we're in now. So we're looking back 10 years. That's going to be really fun. And then we have some, you know, end of year content that'll be coming up over there too. That's a little bit more specific, kind of the extra nerdy and extra, you know, more personal stuff that we do over on the Patreon. So if you want to check that out, you can join us there at patreon.com/bookriotpodcast.
Yeah. If you're going to miss us, our weekly cadence for the regular show over the holiday time, you can go get more Jeff and Rebecca talking book nerd stuff over there. I'm really looking forward to the 2012 power rankings. For those of you who maybe aren't a Patreon subscriber but saw this appear, we did a freebie of our 2011 version. So it's going to be the same format. We've done the same thing. We haven't talked about it at all. There wasn't any furious texting about this one this time. And I think maybe we know it's more fun to have our realizations live on air to tape, to internet.
Yes. We did spend our texting time on another mystery of the book world this week, though.
Should we lead with that after the first sponsor break? Let's do it.
Let's
That's the thing
there.
I most want to talk about this
me
week.
Too,
with you.
Me too. Me
okay.
too.
All right. Quick sponsor.
Today's episode is brought to you by National Geographic Books. So take a second, think to yourself, what is one of the like weirdest, but kind of interesting, intriguing, intelligent animals that you know of? If you, like me, think of an octopus, then Secrets of the Octopus by Cy Montgomery is the book for you. It is a beautifully illustrated book that explores the underwater world of the octopus, a creature that resembles an alien life form, but whose behavior has earned it a reputation as one of the most intelligent animals on the planet. This journey into the world of the octopus reveals how large their brains are. They occupy their whole body, not just their heads. They can adjust their genetic makeup to respond to the demands of the environment. So with this book, you can see how the octopus can change shape and color to camouflage themselves more effectively than any other species. They are cool AF. So learn about all of this and more in Secrets of the Octopus. And thanks again to National Geographic Books for sponsoring this episode.
So I was trolling Edelweiss last night, and I don't even know why now. I don't remember why.
How you ended up there?
Well, I thought originally I was looking for a spring draft, because that's coming up on the Patreon, too. Mm-hmm. We're just going to shout the Patreon. Go check it out. It's great stuff. But I realized that this was not a spring title. Well, we do January through April for our spring draft, right?
Correct.
This is a May 9th title. What was I doing?
Weird. I don't know.
Maybe I just
wandered
in.
Were you in a catalog that does like all of spring somehow?
Don't get me started on that. maybe I was just...
Check your filters, man.
I was just drifting along Hachette's front list omnibus adult hardcover filter. But I came across an entry that I immediately screenshotted and sent to you with a not safe for internet acronym, which is not my want. That is not generally something I do.
It is not. And there was an exclamation point, which is also not.
And I used one of my six for the year. I had to scratch it off.
I feel honored every time I get one of those. I'm like, oh, yeah. I got an exclamation point this year.
I actually, initially, I didn't tell you this. I accidentally texted that to Michelle first, and she's like, what are you talking about?
What are you doing? Nerd. You nerd.
You nerd. Anyway. So I sent it to you, and I didn't say anything else other than what the hell. How long did it take you to realize what the hell was about?
It was pretty quick. Okay. Like, it's so the listing shows there's not a cover. It says cover to be revealed, where the book cover would be, and that indicates something's up here. And then I was like, okay, it's Hachette. The genre is listed as suspense, psychological, thriller kind of thing. And I was like, all right. So it's a big enough deal that, and the author's not listed. So this is a big enough deal that Hachette has it in the catalog. They won't tell us who it is. And they're telling us the cover is going to be revealed.
Which happens. Is different from this, like, is not worth me texting you so far, just for people that don't know this.
I mean, that does happen, except like usually it will say just like cover not finalized. Mm. So cover to be revealed is, I think, a different indicator. But then... Yeah. But I wasn't yet at like, why is Jeff texting me this? And then I saw a first print run and it said 2,500K. And so normally that's the spot where you see like 100K or 25K. And I was like, 2,500K is 2.5. Jeff, is this a 2.5 million print run book? or is it a typo?
That's what it says. That's all we can. Now, listeners, you know as much as we do about this entry in Edelweiss.
And
if you don't know what Edelweiss is, that is basically what most publishers use is their primary sourcing of catalogs to dummies like us and buyers and reviewers. You can get digital review copies there. You can see marketing plans, all the basically information about upcoming books. It's the centralized hub, and it's organized in a million different ways, and please don't get us started on this. But so that's what it is. So we're learning about this May 9 release.
Right. We are seeing this and I'm thinking, okay, I don't know that I've ever gone and looked for a title that had a million plus first print run in Edelweiss. I don't know that I've even ever really heard.
I've told you about one, at least I know.
Maybe one. And so I don't know if the listing of thousands is just like the default in Edelweiss. So if you have something like 2.5 million, you have to list it as 2,500K, which like is weird. And how many people are paying that much attention? Or if it's a typo and it really should say just like 2,500.
Yeah.
But it inclines me to think that this is a big deal because the cover to be revealed situation, but neither of us could figure out who is that big of a deal.
There's the rub. So the one I know we've talked about, and I think this was part of a preview, when I picked the most recent Kristen Hannah, The Four Winds,
yes.
I believe it was, that had a 1,000K initial print run.
Okay.
So
that is how they list them.
That's what that looked like. I'm assuming that a million. That would make sense. A million for Kristen Hannah? That makes sense.
That does make sense.
As a sense of scale, for those of you out there, James Patterson, one of the 9 books we'll have in the quarter, those are 200 to 400K, generally speaking. Anything that we're going to talk about on the show that's like a mainstream book will have at least, boy, what's 25K for what we're going to talk about?
Yeah, at least 25. For like lit fic, probably no lower than 25. A poetry book that is getting talked about will have a 10K run probably. Yeah.
Specialty books can have a 5,000 to 6,000. And there's some, you know, really smaller things that will do 2,000 or 3,000. And not all publishers put this on the catalogs. I think, to my knowledge right now, of the big five, only Hachette and Macmillan do this, which is a confounding factor for our incredulity here, because that doesn't, so that means the biggest whale of them all, PRH, doesn't do this. So there's a lot of, I mean, and the one you immediately brought up was Michelle Obama's Becoming. What would the print run of that have been? I think it's a good question. I don't know the answer, but that's the stratosphere we're talking in.
Yeah, and one of my guesses here was like, is Michelle Obama writing thrillers now? Is that what's happening?
So
here?
Our text thread became like literally what this could be. Like, forget about what we know. Hachette, novel, psychological thriller, just anything. And the first, what did I tell you, is the only book I could think of that would warrant that.
A secret new Harry Potter book.
That's all I can think of that would make sense. That would get a multi-million print run. It just
We ran through some other like very famous people. I think at one point you made a joke about like, I made the Michelle Obama joke and you were like, Ed Sheeran spy novel. I was like, what? Harry Styles and Prince Harry together wrote a suspense book? Like maybe their combined fame is enough. But 2.5 million copies in the first print run.
Of fiction.
Right. And it's not like, that's not 2.5 million copies is what we think it will sell in the first year.
Uh-huh.
That's the first print run.
And so what else do we come... So I gave you two options. You have two bets. One is typo. And the second bet is literally any other possible book. And what did you take and why?
I'm betting that it's a typo, but I would love to be surprised.
That's where I am. It's a Madeline Miller downpriced Circe situation. Remember that?
When somebody missed a decimal point and
they sausage fingered the pricing at Target for the hardcover, and so the hardcover before pre-release was $2.99.
Well, I did speculate like, well, maybe Colleen Hoover. Does Hachette have any of the billion Colleen Hoover books that are coming out next year? But even Colleen Hoover, as you pointed out correctly, based on what we know of the sales so far, isn't going to do like 2.5 million in a single title, especially on the first run. This feels to me like either it's so obvious we can't see it or it's a typo.
Well, I mean, we went through the usual suspects. Like, it's not Stephen King. There's no Stephen King sells consistently, but it's within a threshold, honestly. It's not E.L. James. I mean, just think of the Giants. No. I mean, there's just nobody there.
Oh, your other
there.
Joke was Where the Crawdads Sing Too, which did make me Google, and she was, Delia Owens was published by one of the Penguin imprints.
Well, who's to say she's under contract for two books? That book wasn't expected to do anything.
Yeah. And then later on, I thought, like, well, the only big name in psychological suspense that I could think of that it's been a while since we heard from is Gillian Flynn. But even Gillian Flynn is not going to get a 2.5 million copy first print run.
250 maybe is what I would guess to see it in the catalog?
Yes. Yeah. I would totally believe that.
Kristen maybe Hanna? I mean, my thought was, well, don't overthink it. What's the last big one you saw?
Yeah. Yeah, but Kristen Hanna doesn't do psychological suspense.
But what
hasn't.
If she did, though?
So that doesn't mean she couldn't.
We're now in the realm of speculation. We're agree. Like, nothing makes sense to us, so we're in the realm of things that don't make sense.
Literally anything we can imagine is possible here.
Yeah. So I don't know. If there are little birdies, we have some in publishing. I don't know that... I'm sure you can't talk about this, but maybe if you know about other ballparky ones. The only one I could think of that was close, and maybe I've seen a 1.5 million print run. I don't remember this before. I think there's a chance it ends with us, or gosh darn it, it starts with us. It might have done a 2 million print run. It's paperback. Because it sold 800,000 in print the first week. It's fallen off precipitously. I was just looking at it. It sold 100,000 last week in print. I'm just... But if we're really being specific, it has to be Hachette in hardcover.
Yes.
So if Barack Obama wrote a thriller... for Crown, because he still owes us some books, Rebecca. Remember that $65 million is going to earn itself out.
Yes, that's true. He does still owe them some books, but I don't think so. I think Michelle is more exciting at this point, and she's not looking at those numbers. Yeah. If you work for Hachette and can just tell us, yes, that's a typo, or no, that's real, but it's still a secret, that would be enough for me right now.
I did have a thought. And gird yourself, Rebecca, and listeners. This will be over fast. I'm just going to Band-Aid it. Because I also, at the same point, last week, Mike Pence's book came out to absolutely no whatever, Michigas, about interesting, right? But it did occur to me, if Donald Trump had a ghostwritten thriller coming out.
Oh my God.
Would it have a, it might have a 2.5 million print run.
It did occur to me, like, what if this is one of those right-wing situations?
You said Rogan, like, which could, I thought was interesting.
Yeah, oh, that's right. I did say Rogan. It could be a Bill O'Reilly suspense.
Bill O'Reilly's not going to move 2.5 million units. But
we're
thinking on the right kind of...
But he's been moving units doing his, you know, like, rewrites of history.
What if it's killing Bill O'Reilly by Bill... it's kind of the... It's the meta. It's the meta. It's Schenectady, New York for Bill O'Reilly's novels.
If Donald Trump is creative enough to have come up with the idea to do a ghost-written thriller, I will just eat my shorts. Like, that'll be an epic special episode of the Patreon.
Do you think that would be a 2.5 million print run?
No.
And I still don't think it would.
No.
Because...
I think if he were going to go the ghost-written book way here, it would be... like a grand defense of why he's not responsible for anything and a big list of all the things that he claims to have achieved. And it would be a campaign document like every other memoir by a political candidate that comes out 2 years before an election.
Yeah, I just can't think it would have been. Like, the James Patterson team-ups have sold very well. And then the Louise Penny Clinton, Hillary Clinton book sold pretty well. I was thinking, is there a James Patterson aegis sort of situation here? Like, who could you pair? Like, James Patterson and Taylor Swift write a psychological thriller set on a female pop star on tour and there's a murder or something. I can't get there. I don't know what to
Swifties, say. The Swifties could maybe lead us to a 2.5 million.
Yeah. While they're waiting on Ticketmaster to load, they'll read the book.
Sure. Ticketmaster better just get its stuff together before my Garth Brooks tickets go on sale next week. That's all I'm saying.
Why don't Garth and Taylor Swift team up to launch their own ticket platform? I'm not joking
about this.
Listen,
that's a great question.
Free ideas. Because you know what? They need my business acumen, Taylor
Swift. Garth Brooks needs our business consultancy for sure.
All right, podcast@bookriot.com. I welcome your theories.
All theories, please.
Just if there, I hope, I kind of wish, I don't think we're missing something obvious, but it would be awesome if someone's like, duh, you guys didn't think of, and that's where it ends. I'm out. I don't even know.
I don't know how you fill in that blank.
I don't know.
I really would be just delighted to have either confirmation that it's a typo and you can tell us nothing more, or it's a real thing and you can tell us nothing more. But
I did have one last thought for you on this that was inspired by looking at the 2012 books, because that was the year that JK put out her casual vacancy, you know, it was Galbraith.
Yeah.
She is with Hachette. Is there a psychological thriller with her name on it that could move 2.5 million?
Oh, with her
name
and
not... She's been doing this Galbraith stuff for whatever, how long?
I don't know. I really don't know.
I don't know.
It's really hard for me to tell how aware or not the general reading public is of the J.K. Rowling problem.
Yes.
And if they are aware of it, the problem being that she's transphobic.
Right.
And if they are aware of it, how much do they care or not? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
The place of Harry Potter in, you know, like cultural memory and cultural nostalgia doesn't seem to have shifted in a real meaningful way, but maybe a direct relationship to Rowling has shifted. Maybe it hasn't. I really don't know, because I feel like it's very clear to me that it has shifted from our particular corner of the bookish internet. Mm-hmm. The people who care about the kinds of things that we care about are not interested in putting money in J.K. Rowling's pockets anymore.
Yep.
But I don't know. It's hard for me to believe that she would have that much momentum right now that, even if it were her name and not Galbraith on the cover of a book, it would be 2.5 million copies.
The only other thought is that, use your Bayesian prior, what was the last one? Kristen Hannah. What if she has a new book out? It's psychological thriller, and the last one sold. They're like, we might as well print them all, I guess. I guess that's my, maybe the least interesting thing would be is, well, not least interesting, but using the knowledge we have, don't get too fancy. Assume the world is going to be largely like the world as you know it. And that's the one I have. It's the same imprint. Maybe it's maybe they think it's even more mass market, a Kristen Hannah title. Right now, I think largely it's a woman's title. I think that's wrong, and I don't think it's fair to her. But I think the most people I've heard of who are reading Kristen are women.
If she's marketed more of a as thriller, fiction,
thriller,
sure.
Yeah. More men will read it. Mm-hmm. So maybe that warrants another million. I just you can hear in my voice. I'm like I'm trying to talk myself into it. I can't do it.
Yeah, and I thought about some of the other really big psychological suspense thrillers, like when I was going down the Gillian Flynn.
Yeah.
You know, pipeline, I was thinking about like, well, okay, you know, there's Paula Hawkins and Girl on the Train, but the ones after that didn't do that well. I just don't know. This is a big mystery.
Big mystery. Looking forward to May 9th.
Are you going to like bookmark that Edelweiss page and check it once a week and see if it's been updated?
Can I set up an alert or something? It's like Edelweiss
is kind
of rickety.
Don't you have a recurring task feature in some app?
Yeah, well, check to see. All right. If you would like to also hazard a guess, also give us
Please
ideas.
Do.
But if you want to get on the record for your guess, anyone who gets it right, I will give you credit when the time comes.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Real news. And this is all more boring. We have
As
good
opposed
news.
To speculatory news.
I guess we're still in follow-up. I just had to lead with that. Follow-up. Listener feedback. From what I can tell, Kindle Rewards beta is huge. I don't know what our sample size is. We got a lot of people... And the reply started happening fast after we released the ad-free version of the episode on Friday. And that's a fairly small sample size. And there was like a dozen emails. So this seems to be a lot of the people that have ever bought a Kindle book. Mm-hmm. I didn't get one email. And if I did and I missed it or I forgot about it, I apologize to dear reader or dear listener who wrote in saying, you know what? I'm a huge Kindle user. And this is great. There was a lot of, I do the... Daily deals kinds of stuff. I do one and again. I use Kindle Unlimited. If that's any indication of who they're sending it to, it's not the power user of full price Kindle books.
Mm-hmm.
It is marginal people like me. Dip in a little bit, do some other things. No one seemed really interested in it. It's like, sure, I'll take it. Someone said there was something like this a year ago. I sure didn't see it, but maybe this isn't the only thing that's ever happened in this regard. But then the most interesting thing, so there's that. Thank you so much. I guess it's going to be a big beta. We'll see if they keep it around. Didn't seem a lot of enthusiasm for it. I don't know if it's our listener base. Could be a weird sample size. It is a weird sample size. Is it representative? That's another thing. But the most interesting thing and confounding thing I got were a few people, and I did screenshot and drop this into Slack to you, saying, just wait. This same week, Audible has also revealed their own rewards program, which is different and doesn't cross accumulate with Kindle.
Because of course it doesn't.
And in this case, I think is a better deal if I understand this correctly. So for every 3 credits you buy, you get a $10 credit. Which, if you're a monthly single credit buyer like I am, is effectively a 30% return if I've got it figured out properly. Which is pretty good.
Yeah, that's not bad.
The problem there is credits into dollars. Then I use those dollars to then buy credits. Do using those dollars to buy a credit count towards my rewards thing?
I don't know. Maddening. It is maddening.
It's even weirder for Audible because most people are subscription. If you're a subscription, why are you inside? You're going to buy more credits? I don't get any of this.
It's very confusing because making your loyalty program opaque to the people you're trying to get to be loyal to you is not great. It's not a strong way to come out the gate.
It seems weird because like the subscription thing, I can't think of many subscriptions that give you loyalty points. In fact, I can't think of one.
No.
Because the whole point of the subscription is
you're signing up to buy
it forever. Yeah, they already got you.
You're subscribed.
Your gym isn't like, for every 4 months you subscribe, we're going to give you a free month.
Yeah.
Why would they do that?
So
you're going to be in there for a free month.
Maybe it's the suckers they're trying to get who will just buy the audiobook.
The $29.95 audiobook, if you're lucky.
Right.
What a mess. Mm-hmm. Rant corner. Don't ask me why. Well, I know. I was looking at review velocity for It Starts With Us, for Colleen Hoover. Like, how many reviews are we talking about already? There's a lot. The $16.99 paperback is down priced right now to $8.99 on Amazon.
Uh-huh.
The Kindle version is $13.99.
I know where we're going now. Yeah.
We're not going there. We are there.
That's
how
just
hell
where
works.
We are.
You just are there.
I just... Maybe they did too big of a print run on those paperbacks and they're trying to get rid of them.
Maybe. It's compounding stuff. Okay. Let's.
Okay.
Awards. Where do you want to go? Oh, okay. Let's do Barnes & Noble choose Lessons yes. in Chemistry as the book of the year. Congratulations to us. Maybe we were on this tip. We didn't take bet. We should do this next year. We should take bets on who's what are going to win some of these things. This one's interesting. The book is interesting. I think the pick is cool and unusual. I don't know. What else? We've talked about Lessons in Chemistry here.
Yeah.
Both of us liked it. It feels like the right kind of fit to me, honestly, for a pick.
I think so. Yeah. This is the one that the booksellers chose as the book of the year, which is different from their editorial selections. And I think is the first time that I've seen them do this, have the booksellers choose a book. I also think this is a great pick. It's fun. It's a quick read. It's smart. It's zany and different. Like, it feels like a unique read. My only hesitation is I think this is a little at this time of year where these lists are largely serving to guide gifting. It's a tough one because there is a lot of the plot is related to the character's reaction to, like, so the main character of this book quits her life as a scientist and sort of accidentally becomes a TV cooking personality, and she becomes famous. And we know that there was some sexism involved in why she left the science world. But like halfway through the book, there is kind of out of nowhere a like very on the page scene of sexual violence that really explains why she was leaving. Mm-hmm. And it was, I was like, oh, the tone, it's very out of place with the tone of the book. Not in a bad way, but just surprising. And I think anytime there's surprise sexual violence in a work of fiction, it's hard to make that like, hey, this is our favorite thing to hand sell or our favorite thing to give to people, because that is such a, very sadly, such a widely, a very common sensitive topic for people. It can be triggering. But in terms of like the vibe for a book of the year, I totally support something like Lessons in Chemistry.
Yeah. I think when I first read it, I thought to myself, and I said to you later, what genre is this?
Yeah.
It's not clear because there's a lightness to it. There's humor and zaniness, and the dog doesn't die.
Like the dog does not die, and there are chapters in the dog's voice.
Yeah, sentient narrating dog.
And they're great. It's fun.
The cover, 10 years ago, if this cover comes out, we would have called it chicklet cover. Am I wrong?
Mm-hmm. No, you're right. And there was a piece in, I think it was in the Times this week, because I saw, I followed Jasmine Guillory, the romance writer, on Instagram, and I saw her screenshot that I'm pretty sure it was the Times, had a piece that was like, behind this pink cover is actually a substantial book. And she was like, first of all, that cover is coral. And secondly, this is sexist.
I think I remember Lib saying when the book came out that she was like, I wonder about this cover choice because it doesn't, I'm not sure that it's conveying what the book is. On the other hand, I don't know what cover does that. I'm not a cover designer.
It's such an interesting one because it is, like, it's a light feeling read. Like, it's kind of had this like effervescent quality. We were talking last week. I read it on a flight because you told me it was a great flight read after you read it on a flight. And it was perfect for that. It's engaging. It is funny and clever. It does some things that I hadn't seen in a while or hadn't seen a book do in this particular way. And she manages to have these like, oh, and here's a rape scene. And you like, now you're mad that this happened to the character, but it's also not like trauma porn in a way that a lot of times
also not minimized
rape on the page. Right. She takes it seriously. Yeah.
Maybe what we're reacting to is invention. I mean, maybe that's crazy.
Maybe so.
The reason it doesn't feel like something read before is because we haven't, and that's okay. I also wonder too, and because we've both read It Ends With Us, and all of us who are paying attention have lived through the Me Too moment, maybe the worm has turned where a representation of sexual assault in an upmarket commercial fiction book, I guess is what I'd call this, is, if not expected, at least not a, not a bombshell, not a deal breaker, not a, oh my God, kind of a moment. Maybe we just kind of moved on and this is agreed upon and we understand this is much more common than was talked about, certainly 10 years ago, probably more common than it's even talked about now, and that this character has its own journey that includes that, but it's not dictated by that. I mean, it affects what happened, what she does and what she decides to do. But I don't want to spoil it too much, but it's not the central event of her life by any stretch of the imagination either.
Right. It's not the central event of her life. It's not the central thing the story is concerned with. And this was later on when we get to the National Book Award winner. This will be my complaint about The Rabbit Hutch is that, like, I'm completely over works of fiction where the thing the book is about is look at this horrible thing that happened or that is about to happen to the female main character.
Yeah.
And Lessons in Chemistry doesn't do that. It does, like, you know that a thing has happened to her, and eventually we get the flashback to see what that thing was, but she has agency, she has power, she is in control of that story and who she tells it to and when. I really, really liked it. I think this is a solid choice.
I think solid choice is there. I mean, not my favorite book of the year, but I'm glad I read it. I would recommend it. I would read another something in this vein, but it's an interesting choice. And then another thing that happened here with Barnes & Noble, they picked a speculative fiction book of the year, which I don't remember they're ever doing. I think they were trying to have their cake and eat it too here. Did you see this?
Right below it is Babel by R.F. Kuang.
Which I finished yesterday, by the way.
Oh, really?
Fortuitous timing, which is, I'm going to save it we don't have time for Frontlist Foyer today. We have too many stories. I think it's really good. I can see why book nerds especially like it. I don't think it's as generally recommendable, certainly as Lessons in Chemistry. Probably why they didn't pick it as their book of the year, but they wanted to shout it out. Fascinating to see. I'll talk about it more. I thought it was really good. It was. And there's a lot to it, but I don't. It's a tough hang for your aunt under the tree. Right. Babel by R.F. Kuang.
And I wonder how that came about, because we got an announcement a couple weeks ago from Barnes & Noble that booksellers had narrowed, like that they had narrowed down the contenders for this. And both Lessons in Chemistry and Babel were contenders. So we knew there was going to be an answer. And I wonder if, like, the vote was really close.
Right.
Or something. And they were like, I know what we'll do. We'll just add one for speculative fiction. Because there was not a separate announcement or, like, any indication that, like, there will be a broad genre one, and then there will also be the speculative fiction book award. It's just sort of appeared. I'm glad it appeared. This is a good add-on, but I want to know the story of how they arrived at that.
Yeah, and I think it is speculative fiction, but it's really more historical fantasy, which is different anyway. It's its own thing. It's long, it's dense, there's a lot of world building. I think it's quite an achievement in its own way, but I can see why they wouldn't just pick it for their book of the year. I mean, just like you wouldn't pick, say, $100 book of lyrics. Like, you wouldn't do that, right? That would be insane. That would make any sense at all.
About the McCartney book from last year, are you? You couldn't be.
Oh, that's right. I forgot they did that last year.
So Babel, I was going to ask, that sounds like giant world building and probably not the thing for me.
I wouldn't recommend it to you.
Okay.
I wouldn't recommend it to you.
I appreciate
it's good,
that.
But it's not for you. Well, you want to do your Rabbit Hutch? You already did your Rabbit Hutch thing. Why don't you do more Rabbit Hutch things?
Yeah. Well, so the National Book Awards happened last night as we are recording this. And the winners where did they go in my...
I've got you.
Okay. Help me out. There we go.
Or do I? Oh, where
this
did
is
mine
great
go?
Radio. Something is happening with the
it's
scrolling.
It's their website with their unruly tabs. Okay. So unruly Lifetime tabs. Achievement. Sorry, Art Spiegelman. We're not talking about you today. All My Rage by Saba Tahir, one for young people, translated Samantha Schweblin, Seven Empty Houses, which I've heard a lot about. I mean, I don't know.
I have two.
Anyway,
might
that.
Put that on my list.
Poetry.
I really liked Fever Dream.
Punks by John Keane. Nonfiction, South to America by Imani Perry. And then fiction. The winner is Rabbit Hutch. Finalist, The Haunting of Haji Hotek and Other Stories. I have not heard of this book. Jamil John Kochai from Viking. And then The Birdcatcher, Let's Go, Gail Jones from Beacon Press. I haven't read this yet, but I absolutely will into the future. But the Rabbit Hutch wins, and it instantly catapults it into, it has to be considered for Books of the Year now at this point. There's no, I mean, you win this award, debut author. We've seen other places. The nerds like it. The literati like it. Not your cup of tea. It was okay. I mean, you said it was good, but
it was
really
good.
Yeah.
I think this is going to have to be one of those that just like was not for me. The writing was good. It was inventive. It had a kind of floaty, ethereal feel to it, which I think is very intentional. But the whole setup is this is like the 36 hours before the main character gets, who's a like 17-year-old girl, gets violently stabbed. And it's presented as like, this was 36 hours before whatever the character's name is, like left her body or something like that. It's all, there's a little distance to it. She and the other main characters all live in this apartment building in a mid kind of a rundown, hopefully soon to be revived Midwestern city. The building is called La Lapinière, which is the French word for the rabbit hutch. So that's what they all call it. That's what the title comes from. And there's this like big sense of alienation throughout the story. And I walked away from it kind of feeling like, I want a book about alienation to make me feel something other than alienated from the book itself. But maybe that is what Tess Gundy was going for, and maybe that worked for...
Little mimesis for you out there. Let's go.
Yeah, it seems to have worked for a bunch of people. It did not work for me, and I don't know. It's where I am in life right now, just kind of over stories that are structured around waiting for the bad thing to happen to a woman, recounting the bad thing that happened to the woman. Like, we need art that explores all of the parts of life, and violence is one of those. But it just didn't do it for me. I have accepted this is a book of the year. It's okay. On a bunch of the best books of the year list. Just wasn't my jam. I did read of the finalists. I also read All This Could Be Different by Sarah Tonka Matthews. I thought that was really excellent. I don't know if it'll be in my favorite books of the year either, but that one was really good. And the Gale Jones is on my list, but it's just my personal take on The Rabbit Hutch. It was great writing, but it felt to me like a solid debut novel, but not like a solid, just capital N novel I would have given a big award to.
The singular work of American fiction for the year. I mean, that's what the National Book Award essentially is saying.
I have a lot of internal resistance to the notion of that for this book, but that's just me. Yeah.
I don't have anything to add there. We need to do another sponsor break. So let's do that. Amazon Editor's Best Books of the Year. I'll put in the show notes. Washington Post. I think I'm done with these now. Except when the Goodreads long list, Goodreads Choice Awards are out. You can find that wherever. You can just Google that. I think once we get to the winners, I want to look at that. Not necessarily for the winners. They'll show you the vote share, which is really interesting.
Yeah, I like that.
So we'll come back to that unless we see something, surprising or otherwise.
The Washington Post list is a little different from a bunch of the other lists I've seen. It feels unique in the way that the PW top 10 list felt unique this year. Like, there's a couple titles that I'm familiar with, but it reminded me that there's a Margot Jefferson memoir I've been meaning to read.
Well, so I told you about that, didn't I?
You did, but then I forgot. So now I've been reminded.
That didn't work for me, unfortunately.
Oh, really? Constructing a nervous system? Okay. Yeah. Well, then I'd like to hear about that.
I read six of these. Mm-hmm. So congratulations to me. Take that National Book Award. The Washington Post is where it's at.
We're not
going to
have an existential crisis about this one.
No. Right off the bat, Afterlives, bam. Demon Copperhead, bam. Trust, bam. Young Mungo, bam. Constructing a Nervous System, bam. Stay True, bam.
I was looking at some list of upcoming like TV releases, and I know you read Young Mungo this year. Did you read Shuggie Bane when it was out?
I never made it back to that. No, I liked Young Mungo. It was it's really good. It's excellent historical fiction, a lot of plot, a lot of world building, interesting, vivid characters. I guess I'm just saying to you right now, I didn't go back to pick up the first one.
Okay, yeah.
I would, but there's a lot of books, Rebecca.
There is a lot of books, and there's going to be an adaptation. I know, it bothered me coming out of my mouth.
Sorry,
no,
I'm sorry. I'm such a jerk. I just do that. I'm so sorry.
There are a lot of books. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be an adaptation of Shuggie Bane, so we can catch up with it later if we really
feel
the need
to. Isn't our Bayesian prior now for any book that we've heard of that there will be an adaptation? No, I'm not a joke at this point.
I don't know if it's... I don't think I'm assuming that any book we've heard of will be adapted, but I am no longer pleasantly surprised when a book that I liked is getting adapted for a thing. It's like, that had to be happening at some point.
Adaptation news I was going to put in here that rose above sort of the threshold of interest level. Oh, I know what it was. Greta Gerwig doing a Netflix series of The Chronicles of Narnia.
Oh, interesting. I hadn't heard that. Gerwig's that does seem interesting.
Great mm-hmm. Netflix series, Narnia, hasn't been served by an adaptation yet very well. Yeah. We've had these abandoned ones.
And there's some dark stuff in those books that I feel like Gerwig is probably more willing to tap, and maybe Netflix will be more willing to explore than a big movie release that's aiming to be like the family hit of the holiday season.
But that's what I need now. I need one of the great IPs of all time combined with an Oscar-winning screenwriter. That's what I need to like even get me up in the morning to even turn my head.
Yeah, I'm thinking now like Noah Baumbach adapts Light Years.
Well, he's doing White Noise, so.
Right, that's on our list for next year.
News, a couple things we dropped in here that are kind of follow-ups, follows-ons from other things we're interested in, our ongoing concerns. The Brandon Sanderson Kickstarter, we're getting some more deets about how this is going to go down in relationship with his publisher tour. There's a landing page, and it's a little hard to parse, but essentially there's going to be a three-month exclusive window for the print Kickstarter version of these books. Also, $42 million total was a Kickstarter. I don't know if we ever came back to that. That is a serious... That 2.5 million print run for all of them together,
have to
maybe?
Bring back our notation of Sanderson where the S is the dollar sign.
S is the dollar sign. And those are coming April 2023, but there's going to be an exclusivity window for the Kickstarter. There is no plan at this point to make the ebook and audiobook available. That's going. It looks to me, as far as I can tell right now, that's going to be a Kickstarter backer exclusive.
Yep.
So there you go.
There you go.
So there you go. I don't, anything notable there?
No, I think it's smart on Sanderson's part so that folks who didn't get on the Kickstarter but then either found out about it later or have the FOMO can still buy those books and he can get those dollars.
But the next story. Oh, man, go ahead.
Dude writes fast. That's all.
God bless him. In Babel, Quang, and I, one of the pleasures and problems for me of Babel is like there's some real historical data and then stuff she's made up, which is speculative fiction. That's how it goes. But it's so close and she does such a good job of hewing close to a lot of real things. It's hard to know. But she says at one point that there's this German word, Sitzfleisch, which means basically getting your ass in the chair to do the work. I think Brandon Sanderson has plenty of Sitzfleisch.
I would agree.
He'll sit there. Anyway, that's my Babel notation. The last one caused me to speculate aloud to you. Are we sure that Michael Lewis isn't the reporter version of Biff from Back to the Future 2 that got a hold of, like, I don't know, Chuck Klosterman's the 2020s, whenever that's going to come out?
Man.
And he came back in time to put himself in the right place. Because, Rebecca, where has Michael Lewis been embedded for the last 6 months?
Michael Lewis has spent the last 6 months with Sam Bankman-Fried, the now infamous, notorious 30-year-old.
I think he's infamous now. I think that's right.
Yeah. 30-year-old founder of the now melting down crypto fund FTX. And this news came to us via Bob and the Finn memes community first, where
nice
he was
work,
like...
Bob.
Yes, thank you, Bob. And I was like, is this real? But the full deal is, you know, if you have seen this in the news this week, FTX is melting down. Sam Bankman-Fried appears to be like the Fire Festival guy of the crypto world. Mm-hmm. And Michael Lewis's agents at CAA are emailing movie studio people to be like, hey, BT Dubs, Michael Lewis has been embedded with him for the last 6 months working on his next book. He has written zero words of this new book yet, but obviously because this thing is melting down right now and the subject is really hot, we're going to shop around the idea for the movie adaptation immediately. And I was like, what? Like, we're doing, my household is doing Who's Gonna Play SBF. My one, I like really wish that Jonah Hill and Ben Schwartz could like have a love child. Who could play him? That's been the casting game lately. And then you and I were down the speculation road of like, maybe Malcolm Gladwell should write a book about Michael Lewis.
Now I'm talking, I'm telling you, Michael Lewis.
He knows how to pick them.
He can smell financial fraudsters from a mile away. No, maybe. into different extradition treaties. He can smell financial fraudsters across extradition treaties. That's what his superpower is right now. Does that mean we're not going to get a book?
I think we'll get a book. We
if
might
you can
get...
only get the book or the movie. What are you picking of this?
I mean, the adaptations of Michael Lewis have been great. I think if I could only have one, I'd be totally happy with the movie.
Yeah.
It'll be good. I hope he'll do a book too, and that we'll get like all the juicy stuff. But he does, he really has a nose for an interesting character in an interesting world that he can build the story around. Mm-hmm. And he, I think from other things I've read, it sounds like Lewis has been wanting to explore crypto and what's going
on. It
makes total
sense.
There.
I'm surprised I didn't
it
think
totally
of it.
Does.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that Sam Bankman-Fried is just a perfect character for that. I cannot
wait. He really
wait.
Is a character. I mean, I don't know if you've seen anything. He lives in the Bahamas kind of by himself. There's no board of directors mm-hmm. for this. He wears cargo shorts and has this big, unruly, massive hair. He's into effective altruism, which is an interesting idea that has been taken up by the fintech moguls.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, I've been a longtime skeptic of cryptocurrency as being literally anything at all. That's just me.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to be biased based on appearance, but that's one of those things if you're like, cryptocurrency run by a single dude wearing cargo shorts in the Bahamas? Well, you don't run your business out of the Bahamas if you're playing by the book. just to start there.
Yeah, it's a good place to start. No, I saw this morning, I'm kind of delighted by this because I've also been pretty skeptical of, I'm not skeptical of crypto as a whole concept, but definitely of the story that like that's been told about it in the media and the like rabid nature of like the people who are super into it. Like the big crypto fans are becoming a little bit like internet libertarians, mm-hmm. you know.
Mm-hmm.
But this morning I saw that after removing Sam Bankman-Fried, FTX has installed the guy who was the CEO who oversaw the Enron bankruptcy. Like that's
Michael
how
Lewis
bad
write a book
it is
about
over
that
there.
Guy. Michael Gladwell.
No
can write
kidding.
About, who's the adult you bring in when the geniuses have screwed it up?
Right, and he was like, "I have never seen such an extensive lack of corporate control anywhere." I was ranting to Bob about like, you know, Elizabeth Holmes was a fraud, but she at least had to like get dressed up and pretend she was doing things. Like there is some, I don't want to judge based on appearances either, but this does have a whiff of sexism to it that like he gets to present as like pretty schlubby. And then he also gets the social narrative of boy genius billionaire, which is happening at the same time as other boy genius billionaire Elon Musk is melting down Twitter and like, I am firmly in the camp that
extremely
he doesn't have a secret plan over there, too. I would love to see this be the end of the boy genius billionaire narrative. Like, Elon's not over there with a secret plan that just begins with burn the thing down. He's just bad at this. And, like, can we start telling that story? Can Michael Lewis do all of it? Can we just have Michael Lewis do, like, the downfall of all these things, the
Michael
end of the boy
Lewis.
Genius?
God bless him. Out there doing
Seriously.
The Lord's work for us.
I could not have been more delighted that like this was happening. I've had a not small amount of schadenfreude about this FTX meltdown and then like that I'm getting a Michael Lewis book about it or a movie or both.
I know, right? Everything's coming up Shinsky in this story.
I will
call
take
the
it.
Show for this week. We are now going to take a 5-minute break, which you will not hear, and record the Holiday Recommendation Show, episode 1. I always look forward to this. Thank you all so much for writing, and we did get a spate of recommendations, so we got plenty to get through for a couple episodes. Rebecca, thank you as always, and send us those emails with your insider information about this secretly best-selling, maybe it's Michael Lewis's book. He wrote a novel about crypto. That wouldn't sell to another guy. No way. All right, Rebecca.
Would be amazing, though.
Yeah, it would.